When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another video and podcast from fantasyfootballscout.co.uk. My name is David and as ever, I'm joined on another episode of General's Orders by the FPL General himself. How are you doing, Mark? We were saying just before we came on, it's very, very hot right now. So I've got my windows open, you've got your curtains closed. So it's a very inhospitable environment for us today, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as a podcaster and a YouTuber in Scotland, you usually don't have to battle sunlight. Usually you're trying to keep yourself warm during a recording, but yeah, curtains are closed. I had to get out the old Elgato key light, which I'm not too keen on using because it tends to blind me as I'm recording. But that set up, the sun is blocked out, and hopefully I'll get to enjoy some of it during this international break. One of my favorite, you know, as a content creator, I love international breaks. I know a lot of managers hate them, FPL managers hate them, but I like a bit of a breather. I'm going to go on a bit of a short trip to Ireland this week as well. So not a fantastic first four game weeks, but nice to take stock now during the break.
I concur completely. The international break, when you do this for a living, is basically when you get your time off. Actually, to be fair, I shouldn't complain that the sun has decided to come out in the week where, you know, it is an international break. I mean, we're still hard at work, we're still doing some things, but it's not quite as stressful. You know, we can talk today and we can take stock, as you said, we can look back at what we've learned so far at the start of the season, but we do have a little break in terms of that decision making, and that's probably the main thing we need a rest from. I mean, that going into a deadline knowing you've got to make a decision by X time or whichever time it is, can take its toll over the course of a season. So a few breaks from decision to avoid us getting decision fatigue is very important, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just I look forward to the weekends without red arrows or green arrows. You know, it's I try as much as I can quite often on a Saturday to switch off from the games, especially the 3 o'clock games. You know, when they're not on TV in the UK, usually that's when the grass gets cut or something, or a bit of shopping gets done. I always think of I think back to the Moneyball movie. When the games are on, he just jumps into the gym, switches off the TV because he knows it's out of his control then. So I like switching off, you know, on a Saturday if I can, but it's impossible. You're always in the back of your mind. What happens? What's happened? Has Ollie Watkins actually scored yet? You know, has Saliba scored to hurt me? All that stuff is going on. So I look forward to this weekend where Saturday and Sunday is just quite relaxing and there's no FPL stress involved.
Yeah, and the worst one is when it involves the substitutes as well, because, I mean, I had that, I think, in game week two, when it was the Sunday in this case, with I had Anderson with 11 points on the bench and Gabriel hadn't come on and Foden wasn't named in the starting 11, he was on the bench, and I listened to the City game on the radio and literally just spent the whole game just like everything in my body tensed up, like, don't bring him on. And then of course he did. So it's like those are the worst, because that's such a small finickety detail that most people don't really care about, but I do for a very niche reason. So, oh yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's nice not to have to worry about that.
That was me with Gabriel waiting for Gusto last, you know, game week three. It's that 90 minutes watching substitutions, not even caring about the score, just watching the substitutions, and 90 minutes feels like bloody 90 days.
Yeah. And I know what you mean in terms of shutting yourself off from what feels like control. Somehow engaging in the game, listening to it, watching it, whatever, however you're taking in, maybe if you're just catching updates on Twitter, there's part of you that's willing certain outcomes to happen. Whereas if you completely ignore it and you just come to it at the end, like if I hadn't have been engaging in that City game and just saw on the end, oh, Foden came on as a sub, because I've spared myself the 90 minutes of the perception of control, it doesn't hurt as bad. And so then, like, it's all about managing yourself as ever. We are our own worst enemies at this game.
Yeah, exactly. And it's as much as we try and distance ourselves, you know, we always say decisions before the deadline are fine. You know, don't worry about the outcome, but it's hard not to get, you know, wrapped up in the outcome when you still feel like you could have controlled it. So it's trying to get that balance right.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, of course, there was no green arrows or red arrows this weekend. Have you got any nice plans for, you know, a non-FPL Saturday? We talked a bit last week about how we do like playing a bit of football of our own, for example, getting some green arrows on the actual grass rather than on the computer, so or our phones. Yeah, any nice plans this week?
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, a bit of a holiday. I do I think like you play, I still play 8-a-side on a Tuesday night. I've been doing that for about a year now. We moved to the village we're in about 3 years ago, and one of the first things I did was try and get involved in a bit of 5-a-side. So we play 8-a-side on a Tuesday night, which is great. So I'll play tonight, and then we're going to head to Ireland on Friday for a couple of days, back to the homeland, stay with my mother for a couple of days. And there's a nice little local festival on, which happens in September every year. So hopefully meet up with a few mates from who I haven't seen for a couple of years. So yeah, going to make the most of the international break. Going to take an international trip during the international break. Not very fancy, just Ireland back home, but going to make the most of it for sure.
Well, fingers crossed that you don't pick up any injuries while you're away. Otherwise, anyone who's captained you for game week 5 is going to be facing a yellow flag.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm always a bit fearful before a trip away. My wife's never too keen on me playing on a Tuesday night if we're heading away a couple of days later, because she knows I'm moaning for a couple of days about sore shins and sore hamstrings, but hopefully no major injuries tonight.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Well, of course, with that extra time that we've got available to sort of make these decisions, we don't have to make the decisions this week, we're making them next week. It does, of course, give us the opportunity to really reflect on the season so far. And so we're not going to look at orders today, because we normally look at 3 orders ready for the next game week. We'll do our orders for game week 5 next week. And this time, we're going to have a look back at how the season's gone so far. We're going to nip just into how we got on in game week 4, because that does obviously form part of it. But then in terms of orders, it will be we learned this lesson, this lesson. This lesson from the first 4 game weeks, and this is how we're going to take those broad learnings through for the rest of the season. But what I've done is I've stuck your team from game week 4 up on the screen, Mark. 69 points in game week 4. Do you want to talk us through the highs and lows of the most recent weekend?
Yeah, again, for the audio listeners, basically not much to talk about here. Captain Haaland with 40, pretty standard. The only other returns came from a couple of midfielders. Madison with 7. So I brought in Madison for Martinelli. Wasn't too keen on, didn't feel hugely comfortable selling Martinelli. But again, we spoke about getting comfortable selling good picks for good picks. And thankfully, the first game week of owning Madison, he did outscore Martinelli. Although I thought Martinelli was really good against Manchester United. And it was an uncomfortable watch as a recent seller. And I was quite happy it was just a 5-pointer. Saka chipped in with 4. Rashford got the 7. And then blanks elsewhere. Almost everyone got blanks in defence this week. Johnston in goal, Gusto, Chilwell in a Stupinen did nothing. Bruno blanked again. I think that might be 3 blanks in 4. Slightly concerned about him. Jackson with another 1-pointer. He's got quite a few of them so far. And then Watkins blanked as well. No goals for Watkins yet this season. He's saving them all for the Cup games, European Cup games. So again, Watkins could be on the chopping block as well. So no transfers made yet during the international break. I spoke a lot going into game week 4 that I was quite open to a wild card in game week 5. And I was kind of open to the idea of activating it on Saturday night or Sunday night. If the dominoes fell, that pushed me towards it. But nothing majorly. I was talking about if Sterling did well again, if Foden smashed it, things like that would maybe push me towards activating the wild card. Gabriel came back into the Arsenal team, who I still own on my bench. So that's another factor. Maybe I keep him and hope he plays in game week 5. So yeah, I'm not there with the wild card. I'm not saying definitely not during this international break, but if I'm going to activate it, it probably won't be until later next week. And it probably needs a few things to crop up, a few issues to crop up during the break. Obviously, lots of tempting options out there, like Heung-min's Son, etc. Still would like Mbeumo, Sterling, Foden. And again, I'm not too worried about team value. We probably missed a couple of price rises already, but I want to be 100% sure that I want to activate it before I actually do. And I've got no concerns about activating it maybe Thursday or Friday, even next week, closer to the Game Week 5 deadline, if I think it's the right thing to do at the time. So, Johnston looks like he might be number 1 for a little bit longer at least. And, I've got Turner to fall back on as well. So when I'm indecisive, I just do nothing. So at the moment, I'm just kind of letting it stew, listening to a few podcasts, kind of catching up on games, looking at the numbers for the first 4 game weeks. But at the moment, leaning towards no wild card, because if I build a wild card squad and I compare it to what my team would look like if I took a -4, then it wouldn't be a million miles away from a wild card setup. So yeah, leaning towards not wild carding during the break, but we'll see what happens next week.
Well, I've just put your game week 5 bus team on the screen. So, a couple of tweaks, obviously Stupinan on the bench, Gusto and Chilwell in. And Gabriel, sorry, it's Gabriel who's gone back in, I think it is, but back into the starting lineup. Turner, as I said, in for Johnston. It's not bad. Like, it doesn't look like a team that needs a wild card this week. That's my humble opinion. It's not too bad.
Yeah, and when I did look, set up the bus team, that was my first initial reaction. That team looks pretty decent on paper, especially with the fixtures. You know, you've got, you know, Jackson's at Bournemouth, Madison's got Sheffield United, Saka's got Everton. Again, those three might well stay on a wild card anyway. But you know, Gabriel's the big one. Do I trust him to start again against Everton? You know, I'd be hopeful, but I've been saying every week, one more week with Gabriel, he's definitely going to play this week. And it took until game week 4 for that to happen. In an ideal world, if Gabriel starts, I play him against Everton, bench is stooping in against Manchester United. And then just hopefully Reece James is not in the picture just yet come game week 5 and I get another game week or two out of Gusto. So yeah, the team looks fine. Like I said, I had a quick look at, you know, possible moves very early to do so, but I've been talking about maybe doing a wee restructure with a -4 going back to 3-5-2. So Watkins will come out for Archer possibly. And that opens the door for one of those midfielders, you know, Sterling's, Foden's and Bimo's. And I would just feel a lot happier about my team, I think, if it was in a 3-5-2 and I could jump around the midfielders a little bit more because there's a lot of them that I want. But again, Heung-Min Son's very tempting for Sheffield United at home, but it's probably losing one of the more expensive midfielders to get there, which I'm not overly keen on doing, but we'll see how I feel about players like Bruno come next Friday.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting actually because a lot of people are looking to sell Bruno. His price has actually gone down already, so he's 8.4. I'd mentioned a couple of weeks ago, last week, that I was planning on getting rid of Rashford, who obviously did score against Arsenal, because I actually preferred... I wanted to have a United attacker in my team at some point. I was just looking at the season ticking out. From game week 6 onwards, I got a nice little run of Burnley away, Palace at home, Brentford at home, and then Sheffield United away. Got a City game, yes, but then game week 11 and 12, they got Fulham away, Luton at home, and then Everton away. Really nice run for a United attacker in there, and I prefer Fernandes. So seeing Fernandes' price come down as a non-owner, I'm sort of like thinking, hello. That's quite useful for me. So as someone who has him, it sounds like, you know, you're going to wait around, but can you, I suppose you can anticipate yourself keeping him, but I think it's two United attackers too many, maybe.
Yeah, I think almost every comment on every tweet this season I put up or a YouTube comment is like, you've got too much faith in Manchester United. And maybe I do. But I think going into the season, Bruno and Rashford both look like great picks. The issue is Manchester United haven't started the season very well. You know, lots of injuries, a lot of players underperforming. But I think Rashford, the good news for him, he's back on the left. You know, Hoyland's probably going to start starting games from now on, which is good news for Rashford. Rashford's actually getting, you know, decent returns as well. Bruno's the question mark. And I think I'm struggling. I think most managers are probably struggling with this season. You've got a player like Bruno who, in my eyes, yes, he's been a bit disappointing, but on the other side, I still think he could be a season keeper. But the temptation is all these other shiny new midfielders you can get in any given game week. Any game week you look at, you have very good options that you don't have that have good fixtures, in particular the midfielders. And Game Week 5 is no exception. There's a lot of tasty fixtures in there. I think, again, I'm kind of conflicted in the way I play the game. I kind of pick and hold players maybe longer than others. So Bruno probably will stay. But maybe the way they play the game this season is to be more open maybe to jumping on and off. Maybe jumping off Bruno now for a Heung-Min Son against Sheffield United. And you can always jump back to Bruno when fixtures improve for United. So again, I don't love the Brighton fixture. I know Brighton's defensive numbers are not good. So maybe that you think that's good for Rashford and Bruno, but I just think Brighton are so good and they could easily go out and win the game comfortably, possibly. And you know, United could struggle in that game. So Brighton could dominate possession and there might not be too many, you know, great chances for Bruno and Rashford. So there's a lot going on here with these two players, and certainly open to the idea of losing one in the near future and diversifying a wee bit.
You make an excellent point about Brighton because I looked at some of the defensive numbers on Friday in the deadline stream, and because, I mean, in a way, it's kind of all we've got the decision. We have very limiting things that we can make decisions on when we've only had 3 game weeks. So looking at the numbers, Brighton were officially one of the worst defences in the Premier League. They'd offered up one of the highest XGCs. Newcastle, by comparison, hadn't. They were sort of in the top 3 or 4 for that particular stat. So my view was, I think that I'm going to bench Estupiñán because I think he's going to concede a fair few goals. No, Brighton absolutely trounced Newcastle. So yeah, like anything can happen. The numbers they've posted so far don't have to mean anything, I guess. Like they're capable of winning games and smashing teams, and wouldn't put it past them doing it against United in their current state. So yeah, some lots of decisions to make around Brighton. That same thing with me, actually, with my team, Estupiñán. The journey for my game week was really interesting because I, in the end, as I've just said there, between benching Estupiñán or cash, and I benched Estupiñán. So then when he got when the clean sheet got wiped out, I was so happy. I was like, yes, surely now Cash is going to outscore him. Nope. It was close, but it was a 3-point difference. Of course, Cash ended up with a minus one. But I guess I shouldn't complain too much. I mean, I got 70 points, so Flecken, Cash, minus one. Anderson got just the one because Wolves decided to turn on the goals finally. Chilwell, 1 point as well. My moves were Rashford to Madison, Pedro to Jackson. So, I mean, I'm not unhappy with those transfers. I think they were the right ones to do. But I got, and I think it just about worked out. I think, or it was, I didn't cost myself some points. I mean, Rashford scored, but Madison did as well, and then Pedro and Jackson, I think, in a similar bracket. So I'm not upset, and I'm still happy with what that means to my team going forward. And Bermo came through again. Diaby didn't do anything. Foden with another assist. Saka with 4 points. Captain Haaland. I do have Archer, 12 points for me on the bench, but it doesn't really hurt that much because I was never intending to really use him. I look at the season ticker and I think there's like one fixture I'd start him in. It's probably the blank game week with City in game week like 18 or something. So anything he does, it's not going to upset me because I have no intention of using him. So if he gets something, that's fine. I might get jammy at some point if he keeps doing that and someone gets subbed, you know, so... Or someone gets benched, I should say. So that's sort of like my current situation. So I've dropped down to 82K. But again, I'll take that, to be honest. It was quite a big drop. It was a drop of about 60K places. But, you know, at this stage of the season, if someone had offered me 82K at this stage of the season, I'd have taken it. And then for my bus team as well, I've also put Gabriel back in. And now I initially did it because I thought, well, I want to sell him this week for a Spurs defender. Because, of course, they're at home against Sheffield United and there's some good fixtures coming up for Spurs defence, and you know, Dogi looks good, Porro looks good, etc. But then, yeah, I mean, you make an excellent point, to be honest. He might actually start against Everton, and that actually I could quite like, to be honest, because I think Everton haven't really fulfilled their attacking potential this so far this season. Beto does look good, so maybe that ends up being the game.
In many ways, I wish... I'm looking at Gabriel in my starting 11 now, Everton away. I really wish it was Manchester City away or Liverpool away because then I would definitely sell him. I feel that's like he's just true. Clinging on. It's like that meme, you know, grabbing for the thing you just about can't reach. Gabriel seems to survive week on week. But again, if he does start, the chances of a clean sheet there are good. So
yeah,
I think when it's that kind of scenario, and obviously I'll keep an eye on the press or comments from Arteta and stuff like that. Not that he's very helpful really for FPL with his comments usually, but it's just this season it feels more exciting to make a forward transfer or a midfield transfer or transition to something like you have. I think you're in a good position to already have Archer in your squad structure. It's just makes future transfers a lot easier. So yeah, I need to be careful. I need to get the balance right, you know, with making exciting midfield transfers and not ignoring the defense too much, because I need to keep a close eye on Gusto. If James comes back, that will weaken my defense, even if it's, you know, shared game time. Gabriel, I still expect to be a concern for me going forward. You know, if Arteta changes up his tactics, he can drop out at any time. Estupiñán in fine long-term hold, but the fixtures are not fantastic. So I do need to be careful. And something like Gabriel to Udogie is a possibility for me as well if I don't make an attacking transfer. Maybe that'd be a sensible move, but... yeah, we'll see how I feel next week.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. This fixture for Gabriel, it's like I think they call it a thirst trap, where it's like, that actually looks pretty good, but then it just inevitably fails because what I can see happening is like, this is the game where Everton turn on, you know, they finally start capitalizing on, because they have actually racked up some decent XG numbers. They just can't finish. But this Beto guy does look quite good in the games that he's played. It will be Gabriel will start. Everyone has put him back in their team because they feel like, okay, here we go, lads. Gabriel's back on. And then Everton get two or three goals and we all just get 1 point for him. So I can, or alternatively, we all just realize that's going to happen, sell him, and Arsenal win 3-0 and he gets a goal. So I think, I just feel like he's cursed. He's a cursed player. Yeah, so.
And then it's, if we do keep him, it's you look at your bus team for game week 6, you're heading towards the end of September, and you're asking, why on earth do I still have Gabriel? You know, yeah. It was August 11th, I think, when the leak came through,
yeah.
And we may still have him at the end of September. So we may need to have a good chat with ourselves if that happens.
Yeah, very true. Well, speaking of chats with ourselves, let's move on to the things that we've learned, because there's a lot of things here that do involve sort of a bit of introspection in terms of how we've done so far in the season and what we can learn from that. So the first lesson that we've learned, very much it does involve last minute changes and plans and things like that. So yeah, take us away with lesson number one.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been playing FPL for a long time, but I'm as susceptible as anyone to fall into kind of traps with overthinking and over-tinkering before game week one. So one of my first lessons learned from this preseason and game week one is don't change a plan 24 hours before game week one. So that refers to me every single draft preseason for weeks and weeks. Not that I made too many, you know, maybe four or five over the course of a month. Every one of them was 3-5-2. I was banging on about 3-5-2. It's the way to go. There's loads of midfielders. And then what do I do 24 hours before the deadline? I take out Mitoma and I go for João Pedro and I switch to 3-4-3. And yes, Pedro scored. I think it was game week one. Then I think was dropped game week two and, you know, hasn't been great. And Mitoma has, as expected, done quite well. But it's not even the Mitoma João Pedro decision. It's the team structure decision. Every game week, I look at my team and I think I would rather be 3-5-2 this week because there's players I want in midfield. And it's tricky to get there because I've got Watkins up front. So I've got Haaland, Watkins and Jackson. So there's a fair bit of cash invested there. And that's why I'm probably, if the deadline was in 10 minutes time, I would probably take Watkins out for Archer, get a fifth midfielder and reverse my, basically, I'm going to call it a mistake because I think it probably was. It was overthinking. It was over tinkering. João Pedro doesn't really fall into the category of picks I would usually play in game week one anyway. Mitoma's probably more of a safer pick in my eyes. There's some hindsight here. João Pedro could have went on and been a really good pick, but I do regret it. And it's caused me a couple of headaches since then. And I'm not, my team is not where I want it to be right now in terms of team structure. So I want to remember this for future preseasons. If there's a certain team structure that you're looking at for weeks and weeks and you think it's really good, that's probably the one you should go for.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think what really doubles down this lesson being an important one for us all to learn going forward is that I have effectively the same story in principle. It's different specifics, but I did exactly the same thing. And it's about Arsenal. I know we've sort of already talked about Gabriel, and people are probably fed up of me talking about this because I did mention this, I think, on the Game Week 2 episode. I spent all summer completely not interested in the Arsenal defence, and I saw everybody else being like, oh yeah, we need an Arsenal defender, to the extent that it became a bandwagon, and it's like, well, you've got to have them, so you've covered that off. And I just said on everything that I was on, it's like, I actually don't trust the Arsenal defence. Look at how they finished the end of last season. Really, really poor. Defensive numbers are really bad. 4 clean sheets in their last 20 at home. So if you can't even trust your 5 to 5.5 million Arsenal defender at home against a Bournemouth or a Fulham, like, genuinely, what's the point? It was the Thursday night before the deadline, I started to get a bit itchy, realizing, oh, I'm the only one who doesn't have one. And I had a spot for a defender. Admittedly, I had a spot for a defender that I felt wasn't completely locked in. So I thought, oh, go on then. Why not? Go for it. I went for Gabriel. I was then on a stream, so I missed the Gabriel news. So didn't have the chance to move to Saliba. And I think the recurring theme in both is we knew what we wanted to do. We decided to change our minds short notice. And it's almost like the FPL gods are punishing both of us for kind of questioning our own judgment, if that makes sense, because we felt like we were confident on a certain point of view and we had doubt in our own opinion. And because we didn't back it, like, that's why it went wrong. That's what it feels like. I mean, I know that's probably reading too much into it, but certainly sticking with your gut and sticking with things you've planned can usually have more reward. And I was just looking at how Arsenal defenders have got on. They have. Actually, it's annoying. I was right. They have gone exactly the way I expected. No Arsenal defender scored more than 16 points. That's Saliba. And there's at least 10 or 11 defenders that have scored more than him. Outside of Saliba, you've got White on 11 points, Tomiyasu on 5, Gabriel on 4, Zinchenko on 4, Kivior on 2. So Arsenal defenders have not been the must-own, you have to cover this defence, and they've kept one clean sheet in the first four. And I envisaged that happening, and I decided to bet against myself just to follow the crowd. And look what happened. So that's how I feel on it.
Yeah, again, just emphasises to me, if you've got a plan or if you've got a strong feeling, you know, back yourself. And I guess without even, you know, without even trying to, or, you know, I think you say to yourself, or at least I say to myself, I don't get influenced by others. I paddle my own canoe. I make my own decisions. But if you're online at all, if you're on Twitter, if you're part of, you know, WhatsApp, FPL groups or anything like that, or you consume any kind of content, you know, subconsciously you are being influenced. And I think that's what happened with Joao Pedro, because he wasn't in any draft until 24 hours beforehand. And I remember I did a stream on the Thursday night, and it was basically, I had two drafts ready. One had Mitoma 3-5-2 and one had Joao Pedro 3-4-3. And I think one of the reasons I ended up going without Mitoma was I couldn't decide on which 6.5. Basically, I couldn't decide which 6.5 midfielder to go for between Bumo, Mitoma, and Eze. And I also couldn't decide on which 4-5 defender to go for between the likes of Colwell, Botman, Aston Villa defender. So in the end, because I couldn't decide on those two positions, going for Joao Pedro allowed me to avoid 6.5 mids and 4.5 defenders altogether, which again, I don't think was a smart play, because if I was considering 3 6.5 million midfielders, surely I was going to want one in the near future anyway. So why would I not go for that price point? And again, I'm big on price points to start the season. And if you go for a 5.5 price point up front, you're creating problems for yourself if it doesn't work out, which it hasn't. And we're going into game week 5, and I'm still feel I'm a little bit snookered sometimes when it comes to transfers because of the price points. I've kind of changed the structure now because Jackson came in for Pedro rather than Watkins to Jackson. But yeah, and again, it's why there is like temptation to wildcard. It's like, just play the wildcard, go 3-5-2, get Heung-min Son, get a new goalkeeper, get Alvarez, get Foden. There's loads of wildcard temptation. So yeah, the more I talk about it, the more tempting it gets.
Well, in which case, we'll stop talking about it so that we don't cause you to make snap judgments. But speaking of snap judgments...
Take my finger off the button here.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of snap judgments, someone who does like making his snap judgments is, of course, my dad. And every week I'm like, do we need to keep updating people on how my dad's team's getting on? Well, we have to, really. Dad's army is the theme of the thing. But this week, he's had an absolute stormer. And you're going to hate this, Mark, because I think you already don't get on with the idea of my dad and the way he runs his team. 97 points this week. He's absolutely destroyed both of us. How does that make you feel? Does that make you want to press the wildcard button even more? I'll go through his team in a second.
Before you've even told me who he owns, I'm just disgusted that he scored 97. I can almost guess he's going to be some rogue picks in here.
Oh, go on then. Well, see, if Mark can't actually see, so go on then. Do you want to? You get three guesses.
He must have one of the hat-trick heroes, at least Son or Ferguson.
Oh, he actually doesn't.
How has he scored 97 without them?
I'll give you two more guesses. You've got two more guesses, and I'll give you a clue as to who he supports as well. If you remember, his team's called Top Six Hammers.
I remember I predicted that he might captain Bowen, so I know he has Bowen.
He's got Bowen.
Did he get Ward-Prowse as well?
No. Different part of the team. So here's your final guess. It's a West Ham player in defence.
Zouma.
Yeah, he's got Zouma. That's what did it.
Of course he does.
Yeah. So his transfers were, it was Barnes and Wilson to Mbeumo and Antonio. So his transfers didn't really do that much, but he's templated himself into Mbeumo. But the rest of the team, Ramsdale, White, Dunk, Zouma, Mbeumo, Mitoma, Bowen, Saka, Antonio, Alvarez, and Haaland. So that's what's done the 97 points. So he is up to, I think, something like 2 million now. So... which for him is good. So I'm quite proud of him this week. But yeah, we were saying before we came on, if me and you have a good week, he tends to have a terrible one because he's so off template. But when we have a kind of below average week, because I think the average this week is 72, so we're both below that, he has a stormer. I mean, it's just FPL, eh?
Yeah, that's it's always a killer. When you've had a below par game week, it's always frustrating to see that. Your more casual mates in the mini leagues absolutely storming it. I'm in a mini league with a couple of casuals. I usually win it most seasons, but always at the start of the season, I'm well behind, and I think I'm fifth or sixth already. And obviously they're enjoying it, and there'll be a bit of banter in the WhatsApp. But yeah, the pressure's on to claw back the lead already.
That's the worst thing is when, I mean, this probably sounds a bit rude, but when you know better than them, because like, come on. The general, right?
You're more informed, at least.
Yeah, more informed. Let's go with that. That's much less offensive. When they sort of lord it over you, as if they all of a sudden, you know, like you know, they used to be the apprentice, but now I am the master. That's kind of like the attitude they take, and it's just can be quite insufferable, can't it?
Yeah, like I said, these early weeks are always a bit painful for when you look at money leagues. You're probably better off not looking at money leagues till after Christmas, but yeah, that's very can't true. Help it.
Yeah, exactly. Right, let's move on to our second lesson learned so far, and it does unfortunately bring us back to the Arsenal defence. But it's, well, in terms of one of the specific things we're going to talk about here, but the broad subject, of course, is largely related to team news and when we receive it.
Yeah, lesson learned, basically, leaks are part of the game now. And you've got to use them to your advantage. You know, they're not going to go away. We're probably not going to get a deadline change to the first kickoff or however we would like it. So game week one, we all, you know, whoever was online was able to switch Gabriel to Saliba or someone else. And those who didn't have time or couldn't get online or didn't want to make a panic decision 2 minutes before deadline, you know, didn't do it. And obviously Saliba did well first game week or second game week. It's come around a wee bit now. You know, some of the alternatives to Saliba and Gabriel did do well, maybe game week three or game week four. But yeah, basically, you know, leaks are here. They're probably going to stay. And I know it's tricky in certain time zones because if it's 3 or 4 in the morning, you're probably not going to set an alarm to wake up for a team leak. I probably would if I'm living in Australia, but that's just me because I'm full-time FPL and I care about rank and I care about mini leagues. But yeah, if you know, obviously if you can be online now close to the deadline, it just makes sense to do so. It's probably, it's not good for the game, I don't think. But if you want to do well at the game and there's an advantage that you might be able to get in certain game weeks, then, you know, if it's there, you may as well use it. It's there for everyone if you're online close to the deadline. You know, Liverpool's a good example now in game week 5. I think they're the first kickoff against Wolves. If we get a team leak beforehand and Darwin's starting, you know, you might save your transfer up until close to the deadline. You might go Watkins to Darwin and you could bang yourself a brace or a hat-trick and get the edge over the people who can't be online, who are doing something else or they're sleeping or they've already made their moves. So it adds a little other dynamic to the game, and it's probably the best way you can get an edge over rivals nowadays is taking advantage of a team leak. But yeah, they're here to stay. And if you can, you just got to start using them to your advantage.
Hmm. Yeah, it's one of those things where it doesn't necessarily imply that we think it's you know, great news or whatever. You just sort of roll with it, roll with the punches. Like, it's something that's there, so you may as well use it. Although I'm actually going to put a question to you in terms of, because I think that there's one thing that people sometimes forget about leaks and team news drops around that time is, there's one thing knowing the information, and the second thing is knowing how to apply that information to your team. Because sometimes knowing that a City attacker is benched, what tends to happen sometimes is that, oh, quick, well, we must sell Foden. Let's just say we found out he wasn't going to start in one of these scenarios and grab someone else like a Grealish, someone we know is starting in that game. I suppose I think that there's an element of, they can trick us into becoming desperately short-term, because that guy's benched today, especially if it's City, I mean, you've got to play situational. If it's an Arsenal defender, then absolutely, I think selling Gabriel at 6:28 p.m. on the first Friday made total sense. But if it's in a team where you know rotation is rife, there's every possibility, for example, that in the very game where he's benched, you sell him and he comes on and gets 10 points because he gets a goal and assist. Or alternatively, he doesn't play this one, you've sold him, and then the guy you've bought is the one who's then benched next week, but it's not near the deadline. It's on a Sunday afternoon, so you don't find out in time. And the guy you sold over the next 4 or 5 game weeks outscores the guy who you bought at a snap decision. So I suppose, in a way, the two first lessons learned, you can kind of bring them together. To what extent do you allow those team leaks to change the plans you've made? If that makes... Because I think that some people get into the view of, oh, look, I hear this guy's bench, so I must sell him. Or I hear this guy's starting, so I must buy him. Like, it's not quite as simple as that. I guess it's kind of like what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I think just to sum that up, it's kind of how you react or how you manage a team leak is very important. And it's maybe a case of, if you've got a couple of transfers in mind for Gaming 5, for example, if they involve Liverpool players, or if you already own Liverpool players, maybe have an XYZ scenario. If Darwin's benched, I do this. If Darwin starts, I do this. Just so you're ready and it's not a last-minute panic. And it's, again, obviously, a lot of your first instinct is, right, this player's benched, I'm going to sell him. But you always consider, you know, should I just bench him and play one of my subs? Because, you know, rolling on a transfer, if that was your initial plan, that might still be the best plan long term. If you've got, you know, if you're planning to bank your transfer and do some surgery the week after, you can very quickly forget that plan in a last minute panic, make a transfer and then think, I was actually planning to do a bit of surgery with two frees next week. So yeah, maybe just kind of noting things down in your phone or on a piece of paper and, you know, a couple of scenarios. If this happens, I do that or whatever is probably quite useful, because it is often quite late in the day. You know, the game week one was quite late in the day, and sometimes you've only got 10 or 15 minutes of a team leak. So yeah, and you've also got the issue that the anxiety of the website crashing or the app crashing, which just makes you even more panicked. So yeah, it's tricky. I hate it, to be honest. I do hate the leaks.
Yeah, it's there. We acknowledge it's there. We use it when we can, but yeah, it's very difficult for us to say anything other than like it's stressful and not as fun as it used to be in the old days. Look at us, two old men. We're like back in.
I know, two old men moaning. It was I like making my transfers on a Friday night for a Saturday morning deadline.
Yep.
Have a sleep in. Don't worry about if I even sleep through the deadline. But now you've got to be alert. You've got to be on the ball for these team leagues. Mm,
absolutely. Well, in terms of being alert and on the ball for stuff, someone who was alert and on the ball this week was Sonny. Now, we've done this a couple of times. It's a team that is filled literally with people who have the word Son in their name, either in the first or the second half of their name. It's always going to captain one particular individual. And he, of course, got a hat-trick this week, didn't he, Mark? So take us through... is this the first time Sonny's beaten you this season? It must be.
Yeah, first taken until game week four to beat me, but he's absolutely smashed me out of the park this time. So yeah, 91 points for Sonny Soldiers. It was quite... So I decided... I should say Sonny decided at 5 months old when the season started that Heung-min Son was going to be his perma-captain for the season. That will never change unless there's an injury. So we were out and about on Saturday. It was actually Sonny's six-month birthday, you know, half birthday or whatever it's called on Saturday. So it's quite fitting that that was the day that Heung-min Son decided to turn up with a hat-trick. And as soon as that happened, I knew I was in trouble. You know, I knew I had Captain Haaland to bail me out, hopefully. They both got 40 points as captains. But the rest of his team, audio listeners, absolutely smashed it. Robertson with a clean sheet. Patterson chipped in, I think, with an attack and return. Son with the 40 points. Madison with 7. Ferguson with 17. So we got the two hat-tricks, Heung-min Son and Ferguson. Wilson came off the bench to score. And he could have been even more. Allison on the bench with 8. Ederson started and didn't get a clean sheet. People are probably wondering why Solly March is in there. Basically, Sonny's team was doing absolutely shocking for the first 2-3 game weeks. So I thought he needs an extra bit of spice in midfield. He was born in March, so I made the exception. Mason Mount was injured, so Solly March came in. And of course, as soon as he's come in, he's done absolutely nothing. But yeah, absolutely smashed it. He's beat me this week. I think he's gone from something like 9 million rank to 6 million rank. So not that it matters too much. This is all about the weekly head-to-head. So it's interesting as well. He had, before Brennan Johnson went to Tottenham, Brennan Johnson was already on his bench for Nottingham Forest. So he can now line up with 4 Tottenham midfielders if he wants to. 4 Tottenham shirts across the middle of the park, which is... I'm definitely just going to try and leave that there as long as possible. That's I'll have to remove one if there's a transfer made soon, but I'll leave it there as long as I can, and hopefully 1 week start all 4 of the Tottenham guys just for a nice little screenshot for the old Twitter.
Yeah, that's incredible. I hadn't twigged that at all, because of course, yeah, you can do it in inverted commas. It's just that I've never seen this, to be honest. I've never had this in my team, so I don't even know what the user interface looks like when you make the transfer, because it won't let you make any transfers that are not removing the 4th Spurs player, I think is the official rule. So when you come to that, I want to see the screenshot of the error message you get when you try and transfer out someone else, because I've just never seen it. It's like the lesser spotted Bigfoot or something.
Yeah, I'll make sure I get a screen grab and we'll use it for a stream.
Looking forward to that. That's going to be the highlight of my season, I think. It's something I've never seen in FPL. Never thought I'd be able to say that. But
so
yes,
a big red arrow for me and rubbing salt in the wound, beaten by my 6 month old.
Yeah, but I mean, you did make some of the decisions for him, so don't feel too bad. Don't feel too bad. Yeah, well, let's move on to the third lesson learned, which does, of course, involve negative experiences. And we've got one Brian and Burmo on the screen. So, yeah, talk us through this one.
Yeah, another lesson learned, again, more of a reminder to myself, is to, when you go into a new season, you've got to shake off previous negative experiences. And I was one of those managers who didn't really have Mbeumo in many drafts, maybe one or two out of six or seven drafts during preseason. And I was quite determined not to go there because I was, you know, quite strong in my belief that I think there might have been better options elsewhere. And I was clinging on to that, you know, experience of owning him before, where he hit the woodwork so many times, blanked so many times, wasn't as composed in front of goal as he seems to be now. He's still not perfect, but he's certainly getting lots of chances and he's putting them away. So I think one of my lessons learned is quite simply, Brian Mbeumo is a really good player. He's a really good FPL pick. Brentford are great. Playing without Tony seems to be playing into his favour because he's got to step up. Got the penalties. He's just absolutely fantastic. Lots of avenues to points, set pieces, corners, penalties. He is, I think, top among midfielders for non-penalty XG. So even if you take the penalties out of it, he's smashing it for the underlying numbers. So yeah, a mistake again, I think, was putting too much weight on previous experiences with Mbeumo. And maybe not reacting quickly enough over the first four game weeks as well. But again, that comes back to the whole team structure. If I was 3-5-2, it would have been easier to get to Mbeumo by now than it is with three strikers. So he's still not in my team, but he's still right up there as one of the players I want to get in as soon as possible. And I think if I was on a wild card, even though the fixtures are not as good as they were now for Brentford, there's still a good chance he'd be in because he could be just a glue pick for the season. So yeah, those negative experiences with players, you've got to have a clean slate. It's very hard to do, but when a player like Mbeumo is out of position, penalties, good fixtures, good team, shake them off and just go there.
Yeah, it's important to learn, I think we have learned over many years of playing FPL that one season is very different to the next. You know, for example, one season hits are going to pay off, one season they're not, because there's lots of players whose fixtures line up in such a way that you can just kind of hold three or four through a period and don't jump off. You sort of mentioned earlier on, for example, that, you know, there's a possibility that cycling through these midfielders this season could work. Tailoring your decision-making process to the here and now, rather than relying on historical either data or experiences, is very, very important. So, yeah, Mbeumo probably encapsulates that better than most because, yeah, he was very frustrating last season, wasn't he, with all those hitting the woodwork. I suppose that perhaps implied he was about to explode, you know.
Yeah, I guess my thought process should have really been, you know, I'm probably even thinking back a couple of seasons, even more so than last season. If I put more weight on the end of last season when he was really good without Tony, that was what I should have been putting more weight on than you know, maybe a couple of seasons ago when he was probably new to the league and finding his feet, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it was, I was never close to buying him. So I guess in that way, there's not too much regret, but I also think I just overlooked him, I think.
Yeah.